I'm Brandi Cruz. You're watching a special best of episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. If you're watching this, it's Friday, and that means I'm up in the sky somewhere in an airplane for some pre-planned travel. I will be back with a brand new episode on Monday, but I thought it'd be fun today to revisit some of my favorite segments from Undivided over the past year. But first, if you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, well, why the heck not? It is so easy to sign up, and you get an extra bonus episode like this every single week. Why would you not do it? You can do that in two ways, patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandicruz.locals.com. Undivided is presented by our founding sponsor, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. One of my favorite commentaries that I've done on Undivided had to do with snow plows. I know that sounds a little strange, but it was a big deal at the time. Washington State, across really all sectors of state government, has had worker shortages, and those were made worse by the fact that our governor decided to fire people who didn't get the COVID-19 vaccine. And so, of course, winter came around in 2021, and the Washington State Department of Transportation, like many other agencies, was shorthanded, which led to days-long closures of some of our state's mountain passes, which essentially serve to bifurcate the west side of the state from the east side of the state. So not only was that bad enough, but then the government went about gaslighting us as to who exactly was to blame. First, let's set this up with a fact. Due to Governor Jay Inslee's vaccine mandate, the state fired 151 workers who would have otherwise been directly involved in snow removal operations across the state this winter. However, if you ask State Transportation Secretary Roger Millar,
we didn't fire anybody. The requirements changed and people elected not to meet their requirements of staying employed at the agency. It's a nuance, and we may disagree on that, but that no one was
yes,
fired.
Yes, we disagree on that.
Okay.
Now, I play that to help you appreciate the level of gaslighting that Roger Millar has engaged in order to help you better understand this drama in Kittitas County. On January 11th, Kittitas County's Public Works Department says it offered to help the state clear State Route 903, but the state declined.
When did you guys realize that they were not going to accept your offer of assistance?
Right after we called and offered to help.
What'd they say?
If you're not vaccinated, you can't work for us.
You see, the state's vaccine mandate prohibits it from contracting with anyone, public entity or not, if that entity cannot prove the vaccination status of its employees. Kittitas County does not have a vaccine mandate. Understandably, Kittitas County thought this was absolutely absurd given the extent of the weather emergency.
The risk to the public by not allowing this is much greater than the risk of somebody that may not be vaccinated sitting by themselves in a cab.
Now, the moment that Kittitas County dared to make its frustrations over all of this public, the Washington State Department of Transportation started a campaign to discredit them. Secretary Millar told the Senate Transportation Committee that the county didn't really care about clearing the roads of snow. They cared about the $40,000 they'd get for doing it.
Their concern was, why are you hiring a contractor to do that work? We could do it.
Millar also suggested that the county's offer of assistance came too late and that most major roadways were already cleared.
It's important to note that Snoqualmie Pass opened on Sunday. They approached us on Tuesday.
But of course, it wasn't the passes the county was offering to help with. It was State Route 903, which is in Kittitas County and which intersects with all sorts of county roads. So why would Roger Millar go to these lengths to gaslight the public into thinking that Kittitas County is the bad guy in all of this? Well, the reason is simple. He did it to distract from the one thing about this entire story that actually matters. And that is that the state refuses to allow people to help plow snow if they don't have a COVID vaccine. And why would Roger Millar want to distract from that? Well, it's because he knows damn well that it doesn't make sense. But he can't say that because he works at the pleasure of Governor Jay Inslee. Part of returning rational thought to our broader handling of the pandemic, I believe, is emergency power reform. Emergency power reform isn't about taking power out of the hands of one person. It's about requiring that person to provide reasonable justifications for what he's doing. But let me be clear. No lawmaker should want to reform our laws around emergency powers just because of Jay Inslee or the pandemic. You don't fix a law for the moment.
You fix a law because it's broken. And the pandemic has helped us realize that the law is broken. That's why so few states give a governor such unchecked power during an emergency. You know, I couldn't help but notice during his State of the State address, which was, I believe, his 10th State of the State address, that Governor Inslee used one word over and over.
We must take action this day.
85 times the governor used the word we. Now, usually that would be a good thing. It's better than saying I, or saying something like this.
There's only one person in the state of Washington who has the capability to save those lives right now, and it happens to be the governor of the state of Washington.
But I can't help but wonder, who is this we that the governor's talking about?
We must take action this day.
For the better part of 2 years, the governor has all but cut the legislature out of decision-making as it pertains to the pandemic. Some might argue that's a good thing, that politics and partisanship shouldn't get in the way of our emergency response. And look, that's a fine argument to make for a few months. But nearly 2 years down the road, we are still using a one-size-fits-all solution for an emergency that demands nuance. A solution that leaves ferry passengers stranded in downtown Seattle at night because staffing shortages have been made worse by vaccine mandates. A solution that prevents someone from driving a plow truck alone to help dig their community out of snow. To Democrats in Olympia, I beg you to see these things clearly, to admit that we have to apply reason and common sense to our approach at this stage in the pandemic, and to think enough of yourselves and your constituents to want to be a part of that. Democrats are the only ones who are able to pass emergency power reform. And until they do, they share the blame of any unintended consequences from Governor Inslee's actions. I'm Brandi Cruz, and this is a Best of Undivided episode. We've talked a lot on the show this year about the state of the city of Seattle and, frankly, other West Coast cities that are dealing with not only a rise in crime, but a surging drug epidemic, increasing homelessness. All of those things are really bundled together. In a segment several months ago on Undivided, we decided to take a stroll to downtown Seattle and introduce you to a business owner who had to close down shop in the heart of the city because she was really at her wit's end. Let me take you for a walk, starting at Seattle's famous Pike Place Market into the heart of downtown. Just a few steps in, and we see two men feeding pigeons, not really an abnormal sight in any major city, but perhaps a hint of what's to come. A few more steps and we're outside Target. So are a few of the city's homeless. Here, on any given day, you might see a sight like this. Police rounding up a suspected shoplifter carrying a toaster oven. The store sees a lot of people just like him. People stealing to feed their drug habit. As we cross 2nd Avenue, that's a new apartment building there on the right. A building where Brad Foster watches crime unfold from the 29th floor.
Guy shot dead right behind under my building.
Not what he expected when he moved into a high-end building downtown. Let's keep walking across 3rd Avenue. We've gone only two blocks. As we take a left on 3rd, we pass Piroshki Piroshki, the bakery now closed because of concerns over crime. Just a few more steps before it all comes together. The homelessness, the mental health issues, the drug use, the stolen merchandise from Target. One block where the city's crises churn into an imperfect and often violent storm. There have been two stabbings and three shootings on this block just in the past 12 days, two of them deadly. On Friday, the city's new mayor stood with the police chief and prosecutors to say enough.
Things have to drastically change.
As they spoke, Seattle police officers were clearing the area, telling drug users to move along. A mobile precinct sat nearby. Outside Piroshki Piroshki, which looked like this just a week ago, the area was cleared out by Friday afternoon, but not nearly soon enough for owner Olga Sagan.
It's just banging your head against the wall at this point.
It was the deadly shooting last Sunday that finally forced her hand.
The bakery's surveillance video captured people running from the sounds of gunshots outside.
It's the third one in a month. So as a responsible business owner, I'm putting my employees and customers on the line to be shot. I mean, I don't want to wait till it's too late and my business is done because some of my employees died and I'm carrying this with me. I mean, my employee safety is my number one priority. My customer safety is right up there. We would open at 7 a.m., come out in the morning. If there was anybody here, we would ask them to kind of, you know, just please, if you can step away, this is a private property. This was meant for people to have pastries here, and they would. They would stand here, have their coffee, have their pastry. This shelf here that now is a, you know, drug shelf.
Olga opened this location in 2018 during what was billed as the Pike and Pine Renaissance, a project aimed at making this area the, quote, best pedestrian experience in the city. Some renaissance that turned out to be.
To have opened this location as part of a, quote, unquote, renaissance for this avenue, and a couple years later to be leaving this location under these circumstances.
4 years later.
What is that like?
It's been 4 years, you know? It's been 4 years. I mean, how long of my life do I need to spend on one specific location? You know, I had, again, 15 employees here. As I said, we had, I'm transparent with my number, we had 800,000 in sales a year. And going from that to thinking about my employees getting shot.
Over the years, Olga has been vocal about the challenges downtown, often making public pleas to city leaders to change course. But on this day, she'd run out of words for them.
What's your message to city leaders?
I have no message for city leaders. I'm done sending city leaders. This is my last message to city leaders. I don't know if they may be not qualified to do their job. Maybe it's a county, maybe it's a state, maybe it's national. I have no message. You can't find who is right, who is wrong. This is too complex. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's a crime crisis. I have no more messages. I will pay my taxes. I will keep employing employees. I'll keep being a good employer here, and I will not be in the middle of the political mess that this city has become, fighting over who is right and who is wrong and who is, and forgetting that, you know, we're all people here.
You still have locations in this city. You're still a business owner in this city. So are you going to give up trying to push for change as a business owner?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You're going to give up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And no one is listening. Well, this is not new. This is not... Look at how many small businesses we have left here. We only have big businesses here. They're not listening. And at this point, why would, I'm a smart business owner. I have pivoted my business during pandemic. I can read signs, I can read patterns, and this is a pattern that I can't deal with anymore. You know, it's the definition of being crazy, is doing the same thing over and over and over and over and expecting different results.
So what does giving up look like?
It's look like not caring about what's happening outside the windows right now, right here. That's what it looks like.
You're acting very fed up, and I don't blame you, but you're also very emotional. So as much as you are saying you want to wash your hands of this, your eyes right now are telling me that that's very hard to do.
It's just disappointing. You know, the city and the state and it, coming here from, you know, being an immigrant, coming here, getting five locations in the city, seeing how powerful this city is, the state is, the country is, how much money there is, how much wealth, what a wonderful, smart people we're surrounded ourselves with, that you can achieve anything you want to put your mind to when everybody works together on one goal, and seeing that that's what we're ending up with, it's such a waste, you know, and it's not worth my time anymore.
I'm Brandi Cruz, and this is a Best of Undivided episode. As you know, we added an episode to the show on Fridays called Florida Report, where I got to bring in my sister Miranda to be our Florida-based correspondent. She lives in Miami. That's been very fun to have my sister on the show. But also interesting because Florida is such a different state from Washington in so many ways. And Florida, with Governor Ron DeSantis, has just been in the news constantly. And so it's interesting, I think, to have that differing viewpoint on the show, because we talk about so many Washington-based stories since we're here in Seattle, but there's so much interesting stuff going on in Florida. And on a recent episode of Florida Report, my sister and I discussed how the city of Miami is really bucking national trends when it comes to taxes, you know, lowering taxes, lowering spending, but also a city that used to be the murder capital of America is now seeing some of its lowest homicide rates in history at a time when other cities are seeing their murders go up.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I was watching Tucker Carlson the other night, and I saw this live, and you know I'm a big fan of Miami's mayor, Francis Suarez. I've interviewed him a couple times, also saw him at the southern border when he was there with some other mayors from across the country. And he was on with Tucker Carlson, I'll play a clip of it here, talking about basically how Miami is bucking the trend when it comes to crime and taxes. Here's a portion of that interview.
Turns out if people are healthy, they're happy, they're working, they're not paying a lot of taxes, and they see an increased police presence, they don't have a tendency to commit murder. And that's what's been the Miami miracle story, which is a huge contrast to the Washington nightmare story that you've articulated tonight and over the last few weeks.
So let's talk about crime first, because you've lived in Miami for what, 10 plus years, more than that?
17 years last month.
What? Oh my gosh. Okay, I didn't realize you were that old.
It's math that I plan to stop doing, but
yeah. When you moved there, I remember coming to visit you, and there would be certain areas of town. I remember your boyfriend took us to a certain area of town where they had some really good food, and he made us stay in the car and don't get out of the car. And I remember being very scared in Miami. It was having a huge issue with shootings and homicides. So have you noticed a notable difference in the feeling of safety in Miami as a citizen?
I absolutely have. When I first moved here, the one place that I felt safe always walking around was Miami Beach. When you came back over to the mainland side in the city, the areas I lived in, the area my college was in, were in an area called Midtown, which is close to downtown. You could not walk down the street. It was absolutely scary. There was street lights out. And honestly, and that was back in 2005. And since then, there has been a boom of industry of building condos, luxury buildings, people with money coming in from different countries, investing in the city. And I think that quick change forced a lot of that crime completely out. And then in more recent years, what the mayor is talking about in this particular interview is just, you know, he's put a lot of effort into, you know, giving police more funding and creating more police presence. In addition to that, he focused a lot on bringing jobs to the city and lowering taxes. And he says when people have good jobs and pay less taxes and they see police around, there's not as much need for crime, you know? And this interview also talks more about homicides. We're at a record low number of homicides. I think he says 28 for the year, which is unbelievable. You know, he talks about, you know, in the 80s, it was 300, you know, homicides. And, you know, Miami has a really poor history of crime and violence. So it's kind of nice to be coming out on the sunny side of things.
Yeah, lowest murder rate in Miami since 1930, lowest property tax rate in Miami since the 60s. When they started recording property tax rates, so probably the lowest in history. And also, the city of Miami has the largest budget surplus that it's ever had. And, you know, the last time I interviewed Mayor Suarez was about his luring tech jobs to the city from cities like Seattle that had stopped appreciating those high-paying jobs. And what people don't realize is, you know, are these gangbangers who'd been shooting people all of a sudden going to become techies? No. But when you have high-paying tech jobs,
then you have a whole ecosystem of smaller businesses that have to support those, the influx of tech workers. And so you have jobs in retail, you have jobs at gyms and dog walkers and restaurants, where all these middle class people can start to really make money. And that makes a difference. And I think that's what people don't understand. Quickly on Mayor Suarez, I've said that I think he would make a wonderful addition to a presidential ticket in 2024 as a vice president. He has floated the possibility, at least he hasn't denied it, that he might be considering a run in 2024. What do you think about that?
I think we've actually talked about this before. I think that he sits in a beautiful middle to the right area that I actually also identify with very well. And I think that that's to me what America needs right now, is to come back to the middle and then like just re-identify who we are when it comes to like, you know, money, policy and stuff like that. And we can't do that when we have constantly candidates that pander so far left and right. So I do think that, you know, he would be a great addition to a ticket in 2024, just, you know, for that simple, logical, you know, center-minded reason.
Yeah, and also he's not a household name. And I know that can make a presidential campaign really challenging, but he's very, very charming. I mean, he's good looking, which does help, even if people don't want to admit it. It helps political campaigns. But I think he could get attention very quickly, but also people don't instantly have this really hard negative perception of him, or, you know, one way or the other, because people don't know who he is yet. So he has an opportunity to really introduce himself to the country.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
You're tuning in to a Best of Undivided episode on this Friday. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thanks for being here. I'm traveling today, but I'll be back with a brand new show on Monday. In the meantime, I wanted to play back a portion of one of my favorite episodes of Fridays with Friends, which is a fairly new segment to Undivided, but it's been fun. I get to bring in a friend of mine. We can talk about news, politics, whatever tickles our fancy on any given day. The very first edition of Fridays with Friends was with my good friend, Dori Monson, who, of course, is a longtime radio host in Seattle. And I thought we just had a really insightful conversation about kind of his career and how he deals with some of the hate and criticism that comes his way. It's Fridays with Friends on the Undivided Podcast, where I bring in one of my interesting friends and talk politics and media and whatever else. My friend Dori Monson joins us today. Hello. Are we
How long
friends?
Have you been doing Fridays with Friends?
This is my first one from the new studio. We're launching all these new segments. So I am doing...
So this is your first Fridays with Friends?
So you're my first friend.
Okay, then I feel good about it.
So you were about to be offended if I'd been doing it for like 6 months.
If this
months.
Was your eighth Friday with Friends, I would have been really, really sad.
That's the thing. Seventh would have been fine, sixth, but eighth would have been too much.
Exactly. That's the cutoff, yes.
No, it's my first Friday with Friends, and you're my very first friend. I mean, I'm assuming you agree with that characterization that we're friends. Oh, good. Even though the internet would very much like me not to be friends with you.
You know what? I've discovered something really interesting about all of that. Sometimes the internet has jerks.
You don't say.
That's what I've discovered. That's what I've discovered over the years. Yes.
I knew you were insightful.
Yeah. I try to find stuff you're not going to hear anywhere else.
Can I ask you about, you know, I think it's fair to say there's been some in the media who haven't treated you very well over the last couple of years. There was a really nice article that came out about you a couple days ago. The headline of it is by Barrett Sports Media. The headline, How Dori Monson Built a Radio Career and Success at Cairo. And it actually focuses on you as a human being as opposed to just your political beliefs. How'd this article come about?
I have absolutely no idea. Barrett Sports Media has expanded to Barrett News Media. So it's a daily national profiles that come out and stories about both the news talk and the sports talk media. And this guy called. He's from Milwaukee. I have no idea how he knows about me. I forgot to ask him why he wanted to do this profile, but it turned out very soon, because I'm always a little wary about this sort of thing. The Seattle Weekly did a very nice cover story about me a few years ago, and I was very nervous because I thought it was going to be a hit job. But you know, as you know, when people actually talk to me, and they don't just hear what they hear on the radio. They understand that we have a life beyond our opinions. And, you know, I know the kind of nonsense you have to put up with now. And, you know, anybody who knows you personally feels about you the way that I do. We just love you. But too many people want to just shove things into an ideological caricature, which is really unfortunate.
I say the same thing. And you're still, after it's been, what, 8 years since I left Kyra Radio. For people who aren't familiar, that was my first job in news. And so I was on your show and did reporting for Kyra Radio. This was like 10 years ago. So that's how we became friends. But since then, you are still the most common person I'm asked about to this day. In fact, yes. I was at an event a couple days ago and everybody's like fangirling, not because of me, but because I filled in on your show. So I was like, but the first thing I always say when they're like, oh, what story like? I'm like, if you talk to him, he wouldn't even bring up politics. He'd bring up his daughters and his wife. And that's what this article gets to, is just your love of family and how important family is to you. And I love it because, like you said, it's not about this ideological bubble that they're trying to shove you into. It's about who you are as a human being.
And there are a lot of people who their politics is their life. And I really feel sorry for them. I truly believe that I would go nuts. Everything I talk about on the radio, I 100% sincerely believe, and we wouldn't get the kind of listeners we have if there was any phoniness involved. I believe it, but I would go crazy if that's all I thought about. And, you know, I get there's are a couple people, and they send me hate emails at 8 p.m. and at 3 a.m. and at 7 a.m. And I feel so sorry for them. Now, I mean, just the fact that around the clock, they are obsessed with disagreeing with me about issues. And I really do feel bad for people like that. And that's why I choose not to live my life like that. I'm passionate. I spend 12 hours a day preparing and performing the radio show, but I have to have some time where I'm thinking about other stuff, or else we're all gonna go nuts.
Well, yeah, and you're right. I mean, you'll see people on Facebook who they hate what you're talking about, but they're always there. And it's like, why, if you hate it so much, why are you soaking in it? It's very confusing to me.
Right.
I agree. It's really sad. But in case there's anybody watching this who isn't familiar with you and your show and your career, just give a brief, and I'm assuming most people will be, but brief explainer about what your show is about. And the ratings are really off the charts right now, right?
Yeah, they're crazy. Yeah, I have 27 years, and they're the highest by far. I mean, we've been really good for 26 years, but for the last year and a half, it's been just amazing. The show's about I really consider every listener an individual friend. And the show's about what I would talk about with my friends if I was talking politics. So I spend, you know, probably 6 to 9 hours finding interesting stuff that interests me. And then I just try to find entertaining or unique ways to tell those stories. And, you know, my viewpoint, I think I said this to you a couple of weeks ago, because people say, you know, you're a conservative, you're libertarian. And in fact, I did say it to you. No, I'm a Doritarian, which all it means is I look at every story, I give my honest opinion on it. And sometimes it's not going to fit a box. It's not going to, you know, because I think people who identify as conservative, they see some news story and they say, okay, I have to put this in my conservative box and now I'm going to make my opinion fit that. And that's not a way to be sincere. That's not a way to be authentic with people. So I just give my opinion, and I don't care which box it falls in. Sometimes, once in a while, it even falls in my liberal box.
Oh, you so have a liberal box?
Oh, yeah. It's tidy, but I have it. It's the one I keep a dime in. The other one's the one I can keep bricks in. But yes, yeah.
Well, and your show has always been branded as a watchdog of government. And given what we've gone through in the last 2 years with the pandemic and, you know, government overreach, do you think that's why it's doing so well right now? Or what do you attribute that to?
I think that we are in a time where people are very, very frustrated, especially after the last couple of years. They didn't like being ordered to wear masks. I mean, just on Friday, just today as we record this, the CDC says they are approving injections for five-year-olds and under. And there are an awful lot of people who think that that's nuts. I happen to be one of them. I'm not anti-vax in the slightest. I'm boosted. I think it's crazy to inject stuff into three-year-olds. If you have a three-year-old and they have made it to, you know, mid-June of 2022 and they're fine, why in the world would somebody inject them at this point? So I say stuff like that that I think an awful lot of people think and feel and believe, and they see in the media elsewhere people who have shaped their opinion because too many people say that they have to be pro-vax. I'm pro-vax if it makes sense for you. In my age group, I'm pro-vax. For a three-year-old, I'm anti. And so, you know, maybe that's even a slight little nuance that I don't just have, you know, one opinion about this vaccine. I have one opinion about vaccines for me, and I have another opinion about vaccines for kids. I think it's that approach, because there are a lot of people who just are not. You happen to be, along with me, you know, our friend Jason Rand, we're all voices of, I think, common sense right now. And it's because we don't try to just fit a liberal narrative, because that's and we're seeing in America, and certainly we're going to see it here in Washington, that that narrative that the rest of the media is carrying the water for, it's been a disaster for the last year and a half, and it's going to be a disaster in November too.
Yeah, and I, you know, we all talk, you mentioned Jason, you and I, we do a lot of media criticism. You know, I'm really not very far removed from the mainstream media. You still, would you consider, I mean, you work for a corporation. When you talked, you know, about all those things you kind of raised red flags about during the pandemic and questioned, did you feel constricted at all in that environment to, you know, limit kind of what you were able to say or what you did say about it?
I feel much more the way you are feeling right now, where you are an independent journalist. I have great management, and I have not said that over the years. And people know that I don't say that if I don't mean it, because a few years ago, my life was miserable professionally because I had managers who just disagreed with my opinion. But they don't mess with me. They let me go. They know that I take what I do very seriously. They know that they cannot push me to work any harder than I push myself. And they recognize that I have earned enough free rein. I'm never going to abuse it. I'm never going to say things that are going to get, well, I guess maybe sometimes I say things that get the company upset. They got a little upset with me a couple of years ago. But even with that, you know, this new set of managers since then, they just give me free rein. So I feel far more independent than corporate, because I just don't really have to answer to anybody. I'm responsible to people, but they're really cool about not managing me in any kind of micro sense.
Yeah. And this is Friday with Friends, and so it's really about kind of having a casual conversation.
The first ever Friday with Friends.
Which means you're my bestest friend. But there, so I don't want to like dive too much into issues. There's one issue I want you to weigh in on before you go. Yeah. So I'm not going to say what event it was, because I don't want to like put all of them into a box. But I was speaking at an event the other day that was
really
conservatives in the audience. Stop. Conservatives in the audience. And I got booed. Okay. I've never been booed before. And it wasn't booed by everyone. It was booed by a handful of people. And it's because the topic was elections. And, you know, this is top of mind right now. We're going to the January 6th committee hearings are happening. There's a lot of talk about Trump and the claim of stolen elections. And what I told the crowd is, look, I don't believe that it benefits Republicans to continue to beat the drum on the issue of a stolen election. I think it dissuades Republicans from turning their ballots in. I said, I think there are reasonable issues, you know, with we need to make sure that ballots are secure and there aren't opportunities for fraud, but I just don't find it productive to keep beating the drum on that issue. And that's what led to the booing. From your perspective, how much should Republicans continue to focus on the 2020 election and whether it was quote unquote stolen?
I have had Donald Trump on two times, once before he was a politician. He was in the studio with me for an hour. He was maybe the most surprising guest in 27 years because I thought he was going to be a jerk. I thought he was going to be a pompous ass. I thought he'd come in with an entourage. I thought he'd be on his phone every commercial break. He comes in by himself. He's asking me about my family during commercials. We go to the next commercial. He goes, oh, so you said you coach basketball. Tell me about your girls. He was charming, and I really liked him. And then when I had him on my show during the 2016 campaign, he was wonderful. I cannot hate the man the way others seem to hate him because I've had such great personal interaction with him. Having said that, if he was in front of me and if he wanted my opinion, I'd say, what are you doing? Because on every, I agree so with you on this, Brandy, on every single issue of what's going on in our economy and at our border and internationally and every issue, Trump wins over what Biden has done. And why wouldn't you just take what's happening in America right now and compare it to the way it was when Trump was president? But he can't let go. And that's a disturbing quality to me. So I don't know. I've come to believe that he's not going to be the nominee in 24. I don't know that, but I think right now there's at least one person who would be stronger.
Ron DeSantis.
Or Jay Inslee. I haven't decided yet. What one of those two?
I think he might run. I got to be honest.
Maybe. Inslee?
Oh, I think he will.
Oh, I think he's running in 24.
For president.
We broke a thing on our show a couple months ago about how he went to Chicago and he met with this career consultant and he's the man's at a crossroads. So. And after that sterling 2020 performance where he almost got above zero among Democrats, I can't see why he wouldn't take another run at it. But yes, back to your question. I cannot understand why Trump won't let 2020 election go. Election, like exactly what you said, election security. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that. Do I believe there were 81 million people who actually voted for Joe Biden? But yes, I would.
We might
would
have to disagree
rather
on that note, but
okay, that's fine.
I mean, it could have been like 80,900,030. Maybe there were some fraudulent ballots, but
yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
But
as long as you don't boo me, we're good.
So I think on issues that people care about right now, people care about their family's budget and crime. And why in the world wouldn't you just focus on the, because nobody can, and you know, conversely, nobody cares about what the Democrats are doing with these January 6th hearings. They can hear those hearings till they're blue in the face, and nobody cares. Nobody really cares. People, you know, manufacture their passion one way or the other. But yeah, I would just focus on what's going on with families. Your family budget and crime in your neighborhood, those are absolute rock-solid winning issues, without question.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Dory Monson, I appreciate you. I appreciate your friendship. And just always remember, you are on my first Fridays with Friends.
That's something nobody can take away from me.
This has been a Best of Undivided episode with me, Brandy Cruz. I'm traveling today, but I will be back with a brand new episode on Monday. In the meantime, take this weekend to become a subscriber to Undivided. It just takes a couple minutes. You can sign up on Patreon, patreon.com/undivided, or you can become a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. There you will access an exclusive bonus episode every single week. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.